Coffee with Your Therapist podcast is sponsored by MindGuard Mental Health Tracking and Management. We help psychotherapists and their clients by enabling the clients to report on their mental health while waiting to enter therapy. We are particularly focused on young people and university-aged people, and we will be very interested in talking to clinics and services who address this sector. The benefits to the therapist is that when their client enters therapy, you will already have a deep background profile of how the client perceives their own mental health. The benefit for the client is that they will receive encouraging and supportive feedback while they are waiting to start therapy. Please contact Dr. Edel Crehan via LinkedIn for more information. Thank you. How we got here. So I'm talking to Nicole Runyon, and Nicole is, I'll let her explain it herself, but she has a background in psychotherapy, and she also has some very interesting things to say about parenting. And thanks to Nicole for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No, not at all. And I think someone might say you have a very pragmatic view of parenting, which I probably could have done it when I was in the process of raising some of my kids, but I still have a teenager, so I could still learn something. How did your career start, and how did you end up where you are?
Yeah, so I like to say my career started right around when I was 10 years old, because when I was 8, I wanted to either be a pediatrician or a child psychologist.
Wow.
And, you know, when you're a kid, like, you want to be an astronaut or, you know, a chef or a police officer or whatever. And most of the time, kids don't really become what they want to be when they're young. But in my mind, I love children, and I wanted to do something to help children. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I was 10, my youngest brother was a toddling toddler, and he fell outside and scraped his knee, and I helped him, you know, clean the wound and put a bandage on it. And the whole time I had like a pit in my stomach, but it wasn't like a dizzy, nervous, I don't like the sight of blood kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I didn't really know what it was. And I look back and I think it was empathy, because of his physical pain, it was too much for me to bear. And so in that moment, I decided, well, I can't be a pediatrician, so I'm going to be a child psychologist.
Well, even the fact you knew those roles existed, to be honest, that's a very interesting comment, Nicole, because I've in this podcast, I've interviewed a good few psychotherapists, but mainly female, because it's the careers, there's a lot of females, but even the males, and all of them are empathetic, all mm-hmm. of them. I could tell straight away. That seems to be like a key attribute to do what you need to do with people.
Absolutely. I think you have to be, right? Because there's so much of what I do is intuition. And I think that is probably how a lot of psychotherapists interact with their clients. I mean, we all have learned the theory in school and we read all the books, but at the end of the day, when you're in the room, you're feeling an energy from that other person, and your energy is mixing with theirs. And it really is, it needs to be a lot of intuition about, one, them, but also about you, because you have to be able to maintain your space so that it doesn't intermingle with theirs. And the relationship, the psychotherapeutic relationship, really needs that, and because it thrives on that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I know you actually care, say, about the client, but you have to sort of convey that very quickly for them to relax and open up to you. Mm-hmm. I think that's a real skill, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Okay, and did you specialize in any particular psychotherapy, or, you know, tell us a bit more about what you did in practice or do in practice?
Yeah, so when I started practicing, I wanted to really see everybody. I wanted to be a generalist, because I loved all of it. I'm interested in all of it. But what ended up happening probably about 10 to 15 years ago is I got more and more calls for children. And at one point, my practice was, I would say, 90% children. And that really was just the demand, and it continues to be. And so I decided I would just specialize in seeing children. One, because that was my passion to begin with when I was a kid, and two, because there was such a huge level of need. And an interesting thing happened, I would say 2 or 3 years ago. I started to notice that psychotherapy wasn't really working for children. And I realized it was because of the landscape of, the culture that they're living in, right? We've got technology, we have, parenting practices that don't allow for children to be uncomfortable. They don't, allow for children to have independence. And it really is just stunting their child development. So, with my knowledge in child development, my knowledge in what technology is doing to the development, and then what I'm seeing with the parenting, I actually decided to switch gears and stop seeing children altogether
Really?
and see and talk to their parents instead under
Cool.
the umbrella of what I call parent coaching. Because I really think parents, if they had the tools, they would be able to heal so much of the mental health issues that we're seeing. So,
That's very interesting, Nicole. Can you just say, typically, this just focus with teenagers. Do you what sort of in a good environment, shall we say, what sort of change, say, would you normally expect between 12 and 18, or what, do you expect at 18 that it's almost the fully fledged adult? At 12, it's probably the childhood. Is that the sort of progress you'd expect to see if there was an ideal world?
Well, 12 is that's an interesting age range that you brought up, because between 12 and 18, from a psychosocial emotional standpoint, is identity development. And that it starts at 12. And so it's really important for 12-year-olds to be able to go through what we all went through in middle school, which was that discomfort of how we feel about ourselves, because they're like a toddler learning how to walk in a new stage of development. They are going to be insecure. That's just a natural process that we have to allow for them to go through. We can't just hand them a device and give them social media to have a filter and avoid that discomfort of their insecurity. We actually have to let them go out in the world and be insecure and work through it and get to the other side of it. So by no means am I saying, oh, let's just let them be insecure and forever that's how they'll be and we're not going to help them with it. We have to let them go through that in a natural process, and we can be there as parents to assist and to help them through it and to talk it out with them. But what I do see a lot of happening is this is when kids get a device or start using social media, and it really hinders that whole process. It sort of gets in the way so that by the time they're 18, they're not ready for the world. They leave their parents' house. And they're not sure of themselves. Many of them are boomeranging right back to their parents' houses, whatever they do, whether or not they go to college when they leave home or they get a job or whatever, they're coming back because they're not ready for the world.
Okay, that's really interesting. And you're we mentioned the technology, and I have the previous guest on this podcast who's advocating in Ireland that we don't allow children to have smartphones before the age of 18. And I know in Florida they're looking at the age of 16. Is this the main thing that's causing problems, or is it just sort of like a lack of discipline in the parents have sort of indulged your children too much?
Yeah, 100%. I think, I like to say I have a heavy focus on technology, but I like to say it's just a modality, because ultimately it's under that macro point that yes, the parents are lacking boundaries, they're lacking discipline, they want to make their kids happy and comfortable all the time. And so here we have this now, this device that we can give them to make them feel good. And that then makes the parents feel good. So it's all connected and encompassed all in kind of one thing. So no, I don't isolate that it's just technology. When I first started talking about this, I started lecturing about it in my community, and I did just focus on technology. But over the years, I've learned that actually it's way more than just that.
It's funny you should say that. I have a 27-year-old and a 16-year-old. Boys, both boys. And I was way stricter on the older boy than I am on the
Yeah.
younger one, right? And
Yeah.
some of it is sort of like, oh, don't panic, you'll be fine. In one sense, the first one worked out okay. But I do indulge him, and partly it's because it's a baby complex. He's my baby, you know. He's not a baby, he's a young man. But I feel sometimes I don't actually step up to the mark myself. But let's take a typical situation, say like a boy or girl 14, 15, something, and say they have a hard time integrating into the group of their peers in a school and they're unhappy. I'm sure you've seen this a lot of times. You know, how do you manage that situation? First of all, how do you know it's that situation? And secondly, what would good advice be to parents in those sorts of circumstances?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of social anxiety that I think is pretty obvious. It looks like they don't want to do the things maybe that that used to make them happy, or they don't want to socialize. They'd rather be on their devices on social media. So when you say, you know, what to look for, how does that look? It's pretty obvious. But it's obvious to a parent who may not, who is probably not locked into their device on their social media, because I think that's what's happening is parents are on social media, they're on their tech, and they're not seeing what's right in front of them. So if they look up, they're going to see it. And how you can help is one, you can really work on limits with the tech so that you're essentially forcing them to live in the real world and to socialize with kids. And you can help them understand that it's normal to be uncomfortable. It doesn't mean you have anxiety. It doesn't mean you need to go to therapy. It just means that it's something that you have to work through and go through, because the only way out of it is through it.
Okay. And is, you know, there are obviously, as you'd be well aware, your actual case of poor mental health. You know, how do you draw a line between what you might say would be normal levels of discomfort, or, you know, typical. I remember as a teenager being terribly self-conscious, which made me uncomfortable in a lot of social situations, versus, you know, that child actually needs better mental health rather than just more a bit of a challenge to move forward in their environment.
I think that that's a tough one to answer, because my regular answer would be, if their anxiety or their dysfunction gets into the way of their activities of daily living, or their, you know, their normal sort of flow or rhythm to their day. But frankly, that's happening with all of the kids. They're not being functional, right? Like, many of them can't even make a phone call and order a pizza. And
You
so,
serious?
oh yeah,
Well.
they have anxiety about being on the phone, because they don't have experience of being on the phone. In fact, I was just talking to my, so I'm at the tail end of Gen X, and my youngest brother is at the beginning of millennial. And I was literally just talking to him last night, and he was saying that even he has anxiety when he's 35 now, when his phone rings and it's someone he doesn't know. Because he had less experience on the phone than I did. That doesn't make me anxious at all. The phone doesn't make me anxious at all. But he said anyone his age and younger tend to get anxiety about the phone. So when we're talking about like general dysfunction, it does. It looks like mental health issue, and it looks like they need treatment and therapy. And I'm not saying they don't, but the treatment needs to be very specific. It can't be the traditional treatment for anxiety. That doesn't work. Not for this generation. What it needs to be is what it needs to look like is more like exposure therapy, where you sort of need to push them out of their comfort zones and do the thing and support them through it, but they can't avoid it. And they also can't use their anxiety diagnosis as a scapegoat or a reason why they're not going to do it, because that's what's happening.
I think that's great advice, Nicole. And in fairness, you know, what myself and my wife have been enabling our teenager to go and do more things, and he's sort of grasped it. He sort of grasped these opportunities, and now he's organized for himself through the school to go on a trip to Spain, but he volunteered the whole thing himself. It's great to see. Now, so how do you work with parents, Nicole? Someone like me comes in and tells you I can't manage my teenager. How do you normally work it through with the parents?
Yeah, that's wonderful what you did. And that's actually how I work with the parents is I help the parents do the hard thing. And a lot of times what that means is they have to work through the holes in their development or the things that didn't go right for them or their own discomfort in order to hold the space for their children to go through it. Because essentially when you have a child, I mean, you're a dad, I'm a mom, I have two kids myself. When you look at them, you're looking in the mirror. I mean, sometimes they even look just like you. So it's a real trippy
They look
experience
after
where
their, they look like their mother, luckily for them, they go.
And so that was cute. So what parents need to start doing is sort of pulling themselves out of that mirror image and allowing their child to be the individual that they actually are. And that oftentimes, because childhood development is painful, it's hard. So that oftentimes requires them to go through something hard. And so how I help the parents is I help them work through their stuck points.
Okay, very good. And how can people contact you, Nicole? Do you do online or is it just local?
Both online and local. So I am, my website is www.nicolerunyon.com, and that's NicoleRunyon. And it's actually on its way, it's under construction. It's on its way to being completely changed from being a psychotherapist to more a parent coach and a speaker and an author soon, because I'm in the middle of writing a
Oh,
book.
wow. Well, what's it? And is the book on this topic?
Yes.
Okay. We'll put that up on the show card anyway, Nicole. And like we've talked about probably what you might, these might be the most modern day problems we've just covered. What do you do to relax yourself, in your spare time?
That's a good question. It feels like I work all the time now. I like to exercise. I like to go for walks. And mainly I like to spend time with my family. So, whether that's simple as cooking dinner together or eating dinner together, I just feel like I get filled up from them.
Okay, that's great. And as you know, on this podcast, you get to nominate the playout song. So, did you have a stressful time trying to
I did,
pick it?
I had an original instinct to have this one song, and then I overanalyzed it, and I went down a rabbit hole and thought, well, I don't know, maybe I should do a different song, and then I went back to my original. So my original song is by Whitney Houston. It's I Want to Dance with Somebody.
Oh, that's a classic, isn't
Yeah, it
it?
is.
You can't help but listen to that, and then your feet are tapping, and there's a smile on your face.
Absolutely. It's such a feel-good song.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, look, Nicole, thanks very much, and we really found that very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah.
my gift with this.